Carl made mention of the intense stress that Cindy's under, taking care of me all the time, and you'd better believe she's under stress that you can't imagine. So anytime you want to give her a hug or a word of encouragement or something, it'll really help. She got some wind in her sails this last week, I understand, when she had a grandbaby born, and so that's got her in a better mood, and I'm thankful for that. Would you turn your Bibles to Luke chapter 7? We're going to look at two stories there that show how Jesus is the resurrection and the life and how he can deliver that same power to us. If you're visiting this morning, we hope that you'll examine not us. There's nothing special about us. We're just average people trying to follow Jesus Christ. That's all we are. But if this is a place where you can find God, if we explain the scriptures accurately so that you can make your own decisions about Jesus Christ and your own decisions about the Bible, then please return. And hopefully we'll explain the scriptures accurately again, and the time will come when you want to ask us some questions about that, and if so, we'll try to help you with it. In Luke chapter 7, verse 1, when he had ended all his sayings in the audience of people, the Sermon on the Mount was in Luke 6, he entered into Capernaum, and a certain centurion's servant who was dear to him was sick and ready to die. And when he heard of Jesus, he sent unto him the elders of the Jews, begging him that he would come and heal his servant. And when they came to Jesus, they begged him instantly, saying that he was worthy for who he should do this. Now, there is a lot to unpack there already in Luke chapter 7 in verses 1 through 4. There are a lot of clues that you have about that centurion. First of all, you have a Gentile here, a Roman who loves Israel and who is familiar with the Jewish elders. Now, if it could be said that you were a Gentile who loved Israel and who was on familiar terms with the Jewish elders, any Jewish elders worth their salt are going to try and proselyte you. So you're going to be familiar with Old Testament scriptures. You're going to have a certain amount of faith in those to start with. And the second thing that isn't learned yet in this passage, but will be learned about it, is that more than any other person on earth, this centurion understood who Jesus was. He had heard the accounts of the miracles. He had heard all the tales of what Jesus said, and he saw the truth of them. And because he saw the truth of them, he knew that Jesus had authority over heaven and over earth. And so this centurion is a hero on the level of Joshua and Caleb and Moses and Isaiah. And you go on down the line, and anybody you want to name, this centurion is equal to any of them. And Jesus is going to say that in just a minute. Now it says that the servant was dear to him and sick and ready to die. When it says dear, that comes from the Greek word entime, which has the comes from the origin of worth a lot of money. But then it came to mean after that, highly esteemed. Like if you had an Arabian stallion that was the pride of the herd or something, you might call it, and you loved it, you might call it entime. You try writing Cindy a check for one of her cats. Write her a check for $10,000 for her orange cat. She'll turn it down because the cat is dear to her. And nowadays we think of servants and slaves in a totally different way. But back then they might be part of the family. And this servant was dear to this centurion in exactly the same way. Now, he's a Roman centurion, so he's able to order the Jews around, and he orders them, please go and talk to Jesus for me. But then it says in verse 4 that they begged him instantly, that they also were motivated to do this, that they wanted to do this, that they were sent by the centurion, but then when the Jewish elders went to Jesus Christ, that they begged him motivatedly, saying, this is a worthy man. And how do you know he's worthy? Because he's helped the Jews, I guess. And they beg him to help the servant. Now, that raises another question, which is, did the Jewish elders think that Jesus could do this? Think about it for a second. The elders of the synagogue in Capernaum, did they believe that Jesus was a prophet who could save this man from dying? There was no question in their mind that Jesus could perform this miracle. There wasn't the slightest question among the Jewish elders that Jesus could perform this. There was no question among any Jewish elders that Jesus could do this. There was a certain amount of debate in Jerusalem only among the Sanhedrin, who went back and forth and said, how could such a man do such miracles if he's a liar? But then the other ones would say, no prophet arise out of Galilee. And there was some debate in Jerusalem, but the rest of the Jewish elders knew who Jesus was. Now, how in the world do you support the killing of a man you know is a prophet? Because it says in Acts chapter 7, verse 52, which of the prophets have not the Jews persecuted? Every prophet was persecuted by the Jews, and that means everyone. Because they know he's a man of God, and that's fine, but then he says something we don't want to hear, time for him to die. That's it. Let's hope you and I don't have that attitude about things that we hear that we don't want to hear in the Bible. Let's hope that when we run into something we don't want to hear, that we look into our own hearts and we try to make an adjustment to be more like Jesus Christ and not like these individuals right here. So anyway, in verse 6, Jesus went with them, and it says, when he's not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to him, saying, Lord, trouble not yourself, I am not worthy that you should enter under my roof. Can you think of any reason that he wouldn't have him enter under his roof? Is that because a centurion probably doesn't have as nice a house as the average Jew? Now, this centurion's got money, and he's got a nice house, and there's nothing wrong with what's going in here, but a Jew-Gentile thing comes in, where the Gentile who loves the Jews understands that it makes a Jew unclean to go into a Gentile's house. There's nothing wrong with talking to him on the street, but he can't go into his house. Those are the rules. So he says, I'm not worthy that you should enter under my roof. Wherefore, neither thought I myself worthy to come unto thee, but saying a word, my servant will be healed. Because, and the way I know this, I also am a man under authority, having my soldiers, and I say to one, go, and he goes, and another, come, and he comes, and to my servant, do this, and he does this. He says, I'm a man under authority, and when my superiors tell me to do something, I don't have any choice. I have to go do it. And when I tell my inferiors to do something, they don't have any choice. They have to go do it. And I know then that if you say something to your inferiors, which includes the spirit world and the soul of my servant who is ready to die, that it will happen that way. Now that is faith, is it not? And what are those escalators called that are flat in the airport? I forget what they're called, people movers or something. And we're all moving along for our 70 years or whatever it is. And when it says he's ready to die, he's right at the edge here. That's an interesting term, ready to die, isn't it? He's sick and he's ready to die, but he's dear to the centurion. So the centurion asks him, can you come and help me? And so verse 9, when Jesus heard these things, it says, he marveled at him. Two times in the New Testament does it say Jesus marveled at anything. And this is one of them right here. The other one was a negative thing. He marveled when he went back to his hometown in Nazareth and he couldn't do any great miracle there because nobody believed in him. They said, this guy just grew up the son of a carpenter. Who's he? This is the one positive time that Jesus is amazed at anything, and that is the level of this man's faith. He says, I haven't found such great faith. As soon as he got to the house, he's going to send his friends to do it. He calls this man. He's not far away, and he calls the man, and the friends go, and they get the centurion, and Jesus is going to turn him around in front of everybody and say, I have never found faith like this. In Luke chapter 8, in verse 18, it says, when the Son of Man returns again, will he find faith on the earth? In France, I think it was 1973, those rich eccentric who buried an owl worth millions upon millions of dollars somewhere in the French countryside so that treasure seekers could go and find it. worth millions of dollars. And he published 11 clues about where that owl was, and people went out trying to find the owl. Some people go out searching for treasure, and some people search for a rare stamp, and some people search for just the right car, and some people search for just the right chicken cordon bleu. And what does Jesus Christ search for? Jesus Christ searches for faith. Are you going to deliver it to him? The kind of faith that this centurion has? To where you know so positively that Jesus has all authority in heaven and earth that when he says something, that you do it because you know that he's your superior. Same exact thing that he's talking about right here. So he says, verse 9, when Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him and he turned him around and he said, I say to you, I have not found such great faith, not in Israel. Among the Jews, the people that God has raised, I have never found an attitude towards God like this man who is not from Israel. That's an amazing story of life and death, isn't it? So he says, and they that were sent returning to the house, when they go back, they found the servant whole who had been sick. And so that has a happy ending. Just one other story here in Luke chapter 11 that we want to take a look at to illustrate Jesus' total control over life and death. It came to pass the day after that he went into a city called Nain. That's about 20 miles south of Capernaum. And many of his disciples went with him and much people. And when he came close to the gate of the city, behold, there was a dead man carried out, and the only son of his mother, and she was a widow, and much people of the city was with her. Now, in Zechariah chapter 17 and verse 10, there's a proverb that says, it will be so depressing in a certain particular day of judgment that it will be as though a mother lost her only son. This is a proverb that you can only understand if you've been through it. This last week, I had my first grandchild. And Cindy was over helping them with their grandchild. And came the very first time when mom, my daughter Jennifer, who's what, 27, 28 years old, something like that. And when my daughter went to the corner store and to grab a drink or something like that and come on back. And the moment she left, she grabs him back from Cindy's arms and says, I couldn't get my daughter out of my mind the entire time that I went to the store and back. Only now does my daughter understand how I felt about her, and it is so sweet. Now you take a situation like that, and the individual grows up, and then that individual dies and is taken away from you. There is nothing but going through that experience that could make you understand it, is there? So when it says there is grief with this woman who had her only dead son carried out, and she was a widow, the only person she had in the world, and much people of the city was with her. And when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her and said to her, weep not. Now, how would you take that? If Cindy had Jennifer die and was at the funeral, and somebody told her, don't cry, how could you imagine anything more out of context than that? Why not cry? That makes no sense at all. And it says, and he came and he touched the bier. Now, rich people and children were buried in caskets, but everybody else was buried. They were just wrapped up in canvas, and they had a stretcher type thing. That wooden thing in that picture right there is probably wrong. And they carried him on a stretcher, and Jesus come and touches the bier. How many in here have ever been pallbearers at a funeral? And what would you do if you were a pallbearer and a stranger came up and touched the coffin? What would you do? You'd probably do the same thing and stop. And you'd think, what is this? Is this a troublemaker, or is there some mistake, or what in the world is going on? And so very similar situation going here. He came and touched the bier, and they that bear him stood still. And then the next thing that happened was what? When they stopped with that stretcher and Jesus touched that bier and everything stopped, and then Jesus said the words that nobody thought they were going to hear, and he said, "Young man, I say to thee, arise," I would have loved to have been there for that moment, wouldn't you? And he that was dead sat up and began to speak. Now, when you have a dead body, where's the spirit go? Off into the spirit realm. That means Jesus not only has control over everything on this earth, he has control over everything in the spirit realm. And that man's spirit came back into him, and he sat up and he began to speak, and then he takes him off and he delivers him to his mother. Now, when they go home that night, the young man climbs off the bier, and they have dinner. Instead of going and burying him and having a month of mourning or whatever it is, but they have him back, and they eat their supper together that night. I guess, again, you'd have to experience that to know what it was like, wouldn't you? But again, Jesus says, "I am the resurrection and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me." So, verse 16, there came a fear upon all, and they glorified God, saying that a great prophet has risen up among us and that God has visited his people. Two things about that verse in verse 16. There came a great fear upon all. Have you ever noticed that everywhere in the Bible, and you'd better believe that you would follow the same thing, that when anyone understands that they have truly touched the spirit realm, I think it's in Job 4 when one of Job's friends says, "I had a dream and I sat up in the middle of the night and there was a dark figure at the end of my bed talking to me and the hairs on the end of my arms stood up." And that man in dark, the black silhouette said what? "Can a man instruct his maker?" When any individual touches the true spirit realm, the reaction is always fear. Have you ever thought about why that is? Great fear came. Why wouldn't great joy come on everybody? The centurion's servants have been healed, and this dead man has got up. Why wouldn't great joy come on everybody? No, great fear comes on the whole city. It goes back to the garden. And you remember what Adam and Eve did after they had partaken of the fruit of knowledge of good and evil, what they did when they heard the Lord's voice? They sewed napkins and hid themselves from the spirit realm. Same thing's true of you and me. It has to do with our self-image, that we're afraid of the spirit world. And that is why we need the Lord's Supper, isn't it? That's why we need the body and blood of Jesus Christ. Great fear comes on anyone who comes in contact with the spirit world. And it says a great prophet is risen up among us. Everybody believed he was a great prophet. You go back to Matthew chapter 16 and Jesus says, "Who do men say that I am?" And they said, "Some say that you're Elijah and some say that you're Jeremiah and some say that you're another prophet." Everybody thinks you're a prophet. He said, "But whom do you say that I am?" And the apostles say, "We understand that you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. And that God has visited his people." That word "visited" comes from a Greek word, episkeptiko, which is the same word as skeptic. It means to examine with the eyes, and it has the idea that if God visited his people, that God somehow came down to Sumner at Maine and First and met with us face to face. That when a dead man climbs off the bier, you have experienced something extraordinary, haven't you? And that is God visiting his people. That's the concept of it. And it says in verse 17, this rumor of him went forth throughout all Judea and throughout all the region round about. The one about the centurion, it doesn't say that. But this one about the man coming off the bier the way that did, that story went all around. And so when you and I read a passage like Luke chapter 7, hopefully you and I can see the truth of those stories, can't we? And we can understand that we serve a risen Savior like Florento referred to, and we can give him the glory that he deserves. Lee, you're going to lead us in song number 548, I guess. Let's all stand and sing that song together, 548.